Welcome in our 1320 Kings insider, James Hamm, and host of the Locked On Kings podcast. James, your walk caused us to start talking about shopping in bulk.
Yeah, I went for, I was watching the Man U game, and then Sarah goes, hey, let's go for a walk. I'm like, okay. We did 3.5 miles instead of three. I look at my watch, and I'm like, a good 10 minutes from home, and I've got 4 minutes. And I'm like, oh, no. So luckily, the teenager was at the Starbucks. I'm like, are you out and about? He's like, yes. I'm like, well, come pick me up. So he was able to pick me up so I could at least catch my breath while cruising home the last maybe 0.2 miles.
You should have just ran, James. That would have been made for more content, better content. You trying to catch your breath, sweating profusely here on the live stream.
Oh, I'm sweating.
It would have been even better if you were running and then the your son filmed it. And so it's James trying out for the Sacramento Kings. They're giving 10 days out, Hammer. You could.
That's right.
You could do it.
They're giving 10 days out like surgeries.
But
I should have just logged on to StreamYard and started running while I'm talking to you guys and like, hey, sorry, I'm out on a walk.
We have to find a way to make this Kings content more interesting. That would have been more interesting.
Yeah. On a walk with James. Yeah.
Let's start. Oh, James, we got to go back to Friday.
Oh, yeah.
You were on with the jump and you said something that made me laugh out loud. I don't think you meant to, but I laughed. And I've been dying to ask you about this since then. You said on Friday that, and you'll know what I'm talking about. I don't want to mix this up too much, that you can see the young guys trying to play a certain style of basketball. Mm. Mm-hmm. Like, Doug, and I am so curious as to what that is and what you're seeing. And maybe the Orlando game is too fresh in my brain, but I do not see those guys doing anything at all out there.
Okay, so when it's just the young guys, you do actually see them start to run pick and roll action. You start to see some of the the Max Reno from the top of the key. He started dealing. He started hitting the bounce pass to Malik Monk as a back cutter. Like, we started to see more of the play sets, and that's where I'm talking about. Like, as far as the shell defense where they decided to give up three-pointers to a bad team and that bad team roasted them for 27 threes, I think that that's, you know, that was a coaching decision that was ended up proving to be wrong. Like, and I get the concept there, you know, Doug, even in pregame, he compared Paolo Banchero to Zion Williamson and Jokic, guys that you have to wall off and basically set a line midway through the key and say, you're not going to go score on us every single time. Right. So the idea was to allow them to shoot threes, and the team got hot. I mean, coming into that game, that's not a great 3-point shooting team. I think they're shooting like 34.7% from three on the season, and they shoot well over 50% and just torch you. So that's where I mean by like as far as the defensive sets, that was a hot mess and that was a coaching decision. But in the regular offense, I see more of a real pick and roll game with Max Reno than I do with any other player. You know, whether it's Malik Monk working with him or Neat Clifford, you know, getting to the key and firing the ball to the corner, I see that. I see the idea of what they're trying to do more with the young guys than I do with the veterans. Now, not all of the young guys, because I honestly, like, Devin Carter's out there doing whatever he wants to do for himself. And, you know, I don't know what else to say about it. If I'm the Kings, I definitely bring in Killian Hayes. Like, why not? Like, I'm going to have him compete for minutes with Devin Carter. And, like, in Devin's, you know, Devin's not a point guard, and he's being asked to play a point guard position. And he's not that's not who he is as a player. It's not just that he doesn't have point guard skills. It's that he's a selfish basketball player. And that's okay, because most NBA players are selfish. They are. But when you're a young guy and you're trying to make it in the league, you should try to at least act like you're trying to play a team game. And that's not what I've seen from Devin. Now, again, I bring up Killian Hayes. Killian Hayes, what, he's like a year older than Devin Carter? And on top of that, he has a ton of experience, even if it's not good experience, between the G League and between playing in at the NBA level. He's played the NBA point guard position. He knows a little bit about what he's doing, where I don't think Devin does. And so the problem that you have is when you have a guy who doesn't know how to play point guard playing point guard, it impacts everybody else on the court. And that's, I think, a lot of what we're seeing over the last couple of the last stretch of games where they're getting bombarded. It's because Russ is not playing well at all. And when they're going to the bench, you're getting some quality scoring minutes from Malik Monk, but no one is actually setting up teammates and trying to make the game easier for people. And that's a problem.
These guys are young in NBA terms, and they've got things they got to work on and get better at for sure. But like, I don't look at it as necessarily Westbrook's fault or Devin Carter's fault or Malik Monk's fault. That these guys just get dog walked night in and night out. They can't defend. They can't hit no shots. Like, pick and roll is cool. And Maxine's doing cool or whatever, but it has no impact on on wins and losses. At some point, we could be playing the right way and doing things the right way, but we got to turn that into wins. And I'm not saying you or anybody else is saying that is going to happen this year or anything like that. But, yeah, we can play the right way is cool, but I need some results at some point. At some point. Like, you can't be getting – like, at least start giving me competitive games. Like, you're non-competitive in a bunch of these games. Mm-hmm. And that's – that has to change, regardless of how they're playing or how much ball movement or pick and rolls that we see. I need some competitiveness.
Well, even in the last game, what did they have? They had something like 33 assists. So, like, the ball was moving. It was moving better than it has most of the season, but it didn't equate to a victory. And I get it, you know, like that. The weird thing is it. Some of the game is competitive. Mm-hmm. Like, we saw a half of competitive basketball, maybe even three quarters or two and a half quarters of competitive basketball. And then when they go to the bench or when they try to make adjustments, things just go bad so quick with this team. And it's really tough because what I saw earlier in the game, especially, the last game out, when I thought they were competitive for a good portion of the game, when things got rough, you know, it was 11-0 to start the game. They come back. Keegan started rolling. Then you got DeMar DeRozan. And the thing that I think you have to do if you're this team, when the other team is going on a run, get the ball to DeMar every time. If it's a 6-0 run, stop the run there. DeMar DeRozan will either get you a bucket or he'll get to the free throw line. And that's what we saw. Like, they stabilized the team in the first half by DeMar going to the free throw line 10 times. And then in the second half, that didn't happen. They didn't bite on his pump fake. He wasn't able to get the ball to drop. And so it became like, okay, your one ace in the hole to stop a run isn't working out tonight. And so you're in trouble. And this is what they did in the 2017-18 season with Zebo, with Zach Randolph. They would feed Zach every time that there was a run. And it just kept them competitive in a game. It stopped the game from getting completely out of control. That's what we've seen over the last couple of games. Like, they're doing fine. And then they face plant. And whether it's bringing in the wrong mix of players or one specific player or a grouping of two players, it doesn't matter. Whatever happens, this team just like falls apart super quick and there's no way for them to catch up. And Kenny, I get what you're saying about wins. I need them to look like they know at least how to finish a game. Like, and finish a game, I mean, like, even if you lose by 6 points, you lose by 8 points, that's fine. Show me that you know how to play for 48 minutes, because it can't be that you lose by 17 and the only reason you didn't lose by 25 or 30 is because Doug McDermott came in and scored 8 points in the final 2 minutes. Mm. Like, that's not what we're talking about here. It has to look more competitive. And I asked Doug about it after the Orlando game. Like, what I saw in the fourth quarter of that game was unacceptable. Like, I can't watch a bunch of kids go out there and do cardio and score 10 points in a quarter and have one guy out there looking like he's going to shoot every ball. He doesn't give a rat's whatever about anyone else. He is going to get his shots. It's like, okay, man, you try to get your shots and the team score 10 points. So one player can impact the entirety of the group by just being so individual that it stands out. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's a problem. And that's, to be honest, it's why I believe Devin Carter was out of the rotation in the next game. Mm-hmm. He played the last 5 minutes of the game. Okay. It's probably why they went out and got a point guard. Like, so, hey, we need somebody that can at least control the court for a short amount of time when we go away from Russ or we go away from Malik.
Let's talk about those two guys here for a second. The weekend was filled with a couple of signings for the Sacramento Kings, one being Killian Hayes. He signed a 10-day contract with the team, a former number 7 overall pick in the 2020 draft, 6'5 point guard. Hasn't played in the NBA, I believe, since last March. And then Patrick Baldwin Jr., who many in the chat are very familiar with, the former Golden State Warrior, 28th overall pick, played a bunch for the Wizards, too. I don't know the last NBA game that he played. What do you think of those two signings, and what do you think the motivation behind those two signings were?
Yeah, okay, so I think that just to start with Killian Hayes, I loved Killian Hayes in that draft. You know, he's a number 7 pick. And, you know, again, that's prime pandemic. So I wrote 23 mock drafts for NBC Sports during that stretch. I absolutely watched so much Killian Hayes footage. It was crazy. He's got outstanding court vision. He's a big guard at 6'4", 6'5". He's got a 6'8 wingspan. Coming into the league, everyone knew that he had a problem with the three-point shot, and it hasn't developed all that well. But his court vision and his size and the fact that he's a left-handed point guard, it really did like make you think that there was a possibility of him being a real prospect. Again, there's no reason why he should have gone above Tyrese Halliburton, which he did like five spots higher in the draft. But I think when you're looking at certain young players, and I'm going to lump both of these guys into the same exact thing, they remind me of, you know, situations that the Kings have been in multiple times where they bring in so many young players that they get lost in the shuffle. And, you know, we can look at the 2017 NBA draft or the Kings draft, De'Aaron Fox, number 5. But then they had two other first rounders, an early second, and they brought Bogdan over in that same year. Plus they had 4 rookies from the year before. So someone was going to get lost, and Justin Jackson got lost, and Harry Giles got lost, and Frank Mason got lost. And, you know, Bogdan Bogdanovich was a pro. He came in, he was just fine. But go back to the year before, and that draft was Papa Giannis. It was Malachi Richardson at 22 and Scalabissiere at 28. And then they traded for Buddy Hield in the DeMarcus Cousins trade. All of those players got lost outside of Fox and Bogdanovich, all of them. And that's the NBA in a nutshell. So many players get lost as draft picks. And Killian Hayes drafted number 7 overall. What happens the next year? The Detroit Pistons get the number 1 overall pick in the draft and have no choice but to draft Cade Cunningham because it's the right play for their franchise. So that knocks Killian Hayes out of a lead guard position and hands it to Cade Cunningham. The next year, they're number 5 pick in the draft. What do? They draft Jaden Ivey. Killian Hayes is done. He's done as a prospect in Detroit. And once you lose that first round, you know, thing that's a tag that's on Devin Carter right now, it's on, you know, every first round pick. It's like, oh, you're a first rounder. Once you lose that and you go to a second team, nobody cares what you are anymore. Like, realistically, nobody cares that Killian Hayes is a number 7 pick in the draft. You're not getting the 7th pick in the draft. You're getting a prospect that has failed multiple times at this point and hasn't been able to get his footing back in the league. So I look at Patrick Baldwin the same exact way. Patrick Baldwin went to a situation in Golden State where they were already failing with one prospect after another. They're at the end of their height, but it's the 2 timeline situation. They weren't going to develop him. They were going to focus on Kuminga and on possibly Wiseman and possibly Moses Moody. Look at how many times they failed in that situation as well. Mm. So I don't know that it's Patrick Baldwin's fault that he's not an NBA player. He's had enough time that you'd hope that he'd be able to get into the league again, or Killian Hayes, the same thing. But I do think that there is there's one positive about being a first round pick, and that is that you typically get at least 3 years of your money paid for. And so you have money coming in, and if you're smart with your money, you have enough money to stay in the States and play in the G League and keep developing and keep being in front of eyes that might get you back into the league, as opposed to either one of these players going overseas and playing for the last couple of years and just being completely forgotten about. So I do think that there is possibility here, and I would give Killian Hayes a shot. Patrick Baldwin's, he's grown to 7 foot tall. Like, why not give him a shot? He's a, you know, super slow-mo guy and couldn't jump over a phone book at the combines, put up like a 23.5-inch standing vert and a 26.5-inch max vert. But he's a grown man now, you know, even at 23, he's a grown man. He's a couple of years away from when he was drafted, and maybe you find something, maybe you don't, but it doesn't hurt to try.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%, James. I got zero expectations for either one of these guys. Not thinking that they're going to stick around or show anything or anything like that. But I do have my eye on Killian Hayes, man. Everything that you just laid out, you laid it out perfectly as to why you would at the very least give him a look, especially in the Kings situation where the season's going nowhere. You're running out of players. Like, you actually need some competent NBA players on the roster. And why not take a look at Killian Hayes? If I'm in a dream world or a dream scenario, maybe Killian shows something. Maybe he comes to the Kings and for the final 25 plus games, however many games they have less, you know, he's averaging 13 points a night with 6 assists. And because he's a skilled guy, he has skills. Being able to put it all together has been an issue. And having a clean slate here in Sacramento and having opportunity here in Sacramento, yeah, why not see what it looks like with a guy like Killian Hayes? Baldwin Jr. as well, like, I'm a little less inclined to believe that there's something there with him, but like James said, why not? Why not see what these guys got?
Yeah, and Patrick Baldwin, people forget, was like the top-rated prospect heading into that draft. You know, mm-hmm. I talked about it on Locked On last night. But Patrick Baldwin is basically Scalabissiere. He went in as like the number one or number two prospect as a freshman, and then got buried in his year in college. And next thing you know, they fall to number 28 because they're still, you know, that they were really good the year or two before and everyone knew who they were. And then all of a sudden they've got to rebuild their value as players. I think like sticking around the G League, maybe it does help. I mean, certainly getting a player who's averaging 22 points and 8.5 assists, like, why not try it? Even with Baldwin, I think one of the problems that Baldwin's had at the G League level is he's not quick enough to create a bunch of like things for himself. But at the G League level, if you're that big and you're going to be asked to do that, I kind of want to see what he looks like as an NBA like stretch four, stretch five, stand in the corner. You know, and if every once in a while you break past a guy and you get to the rim or whatever, that's fine. But for right now, let's see if you're a better catch and shoot 3-point shooter than somebody who's creating for himself. And again, I think, you know, trying to play Neat Clifford at the point guard is a bit of a square peg in a round hole. And I think eventually he can get there. But for right now, I would much rather have a guy like Killian Hayes come in, manage the backup point guard spot, and feed Neat Clifford. Allow Neat Clifford to become a more comfortable player at the NBA level. If he becomes a secondary playmaker off of that, that's fine. But to ask him to bring the ball up, to manage the clock, to manage the players, to manage where everyone's at on the floor, he's not there yet. And it doesn't matter, you know, you give him an all-star break a week away to kind of learn a little bit more. To me, it doesn't matter. He needs an offseason. He needs to run, you know, the summer league squad. He needs to run the California Classic squad, whatever it is, and show more of those point guard skills. But I also think that, like, deep down, he's probably a shooting guard with creation skills and a secondary ball handler than he is a point guard. So why don't you get him a point guard that can at least handle those duties, bringing the ball up, getting people in the right spot, managing the clock, and take all of that mental side off of Nate Clifford's plate. And maybe all of a sudden he's a better catch and shoot 3-point shooter. Maybe he does better with some of the finer nuances of things when all the focus isn't on him.
So 1320 Kings Insider and host of the Locked On Kings podcast, our man James Hamm here as the marathon continues. 60 minutes of commercial-free sports talk on KIFM West Sacramento, KRXQ HD2 Sacramento, ESPN 1320, always live on the free Odyssey app with Dylan McKC here. Hammer, we were talking earlier, and Kenny was pretty emphatic about this point. They've got the Memphis Grizzlies tonight. The Memphis Grizzlies are obviously not very good. Ja Morant is not going to be a part of what they're doing. Is it important for the Sacramento Kings to get a win? Like, even if you lose 27 of 28 or 28 of 29, is it important to have that one break up two potentially long losing streaks?
Oh, yeah, I totally think it is. Like, these guys need a win so bad. You know, Doug needs a win so bad. It's just to feel better about yourself for a day, you know, to not feel like the weight of the world is like coming down upon you and to sit here and, you know, set dubious records all the time. That's not fun. You know, like when you're watching two teams on Thursday night's loss to Orlando, two teams set franchise records. One of those hits, it's a franchise record, 27 threes. The other one, a franchise record, 15 consecutive losses. Like that, it just hurts. It's not fun for anybody involved. So I know they don't like deep down the franchise itself, like as a entity, doesn't want to win a bunch of games down the stretch here. They want to develop young players. They want to, you know, they want to preserve their spot in the draft lottery and all that. But at the same time, like you don't want that culture of losing to just permeate through your system. These young guys specifically, they need to know that there is a way to break through and to actually find success and to feel like you accomplished something in a game. And, you know, it's fine that you're scoring more points or you're grabbing more rebounds. But at the same time, there has to be like some sort of carrot to dangle in front of these guys. And that is, you know, victories. And you're hoping that, you know, one of these games they figure it out. And again, I know the pro tank camp is heavy here in Sacramento right now. But also keep in mind the Kings have 12 wins or 12 in what, 46 on the season. And they're three games behind everyone else. Like, and some of these teams, there's no way for them to already catch what the Kings are doing.
They've all but got that worst record in the league locked up.
They do. They do. And there's a big difference between being the worst team in the league and being the second worst team in the league. And I know like the lottery gods have not shined upon the worst team in the league and given them the number one pick during the last, you know, what, six drafts or whatever, since they switched up the system. That doesn't mean that it won't happen this year. Everyone has the top three have like a 14.5% chance of landing the number one overall pick. The key is though, this is a really good draft, and I don't want to put a number on it exactly, but once you get past the number five pick, it becomes a little less stable, right? And so if you're looking at a super heavy top three, but then you have these other kids that are showing up and saying, I'm going to be the fourth pick or the fifth pick, you want to be, if you're the worst team in the league, the worst selection you can have in the draft is the number five pick. And that means if four teams jumped ahead of you, which would just be like horrific. But if that does happen, you still want to be as close to the top as you can, because, you know, whether it's Wilson or it's one of these other guys, like there are players here that you can land at the number five pick that can really change the course of your franchise. Maybe not as much as number one or number two, but certainly, you know, there's potential for them to be frontline starters, all-star level players, and that's what you should be striving for.
Speaking of the draft, we had a discussion last week, just a real hypothetical, about if one of the teams late in the first round, say that whoever has the number 22 pick, called up and said, hey, we'd like to inquire about Keegan Murray, and we're willing to give up a first-round pick this year to get Keegan Murray. We'll make salaries match however they need to. But the real prize there would be getting back into the first round. It would cost you a guy like Keegan Murray. Would you be open to a deal like that, or is Keegan Murray like, nah, this is a guy that I want to have here to help build around?
Yeah, I mean, me personally, I wouldn't. I mean, it would have to be like a top 10 pick for me to move off of Keegan, because, you know, there's a reason why Keegan Murray has so much value around the league. And that is, number one, untapped potential. But number two, even if he is who he is, he's still a really good basketball player, and a player that, you know, really good teams, championship level teams have these 6'8", 3-and-D wings. Again, maybe his 3-point percentage isn't where it should be right now, but certainly a player that can hold down a position, play 36 to 38 minutes a night, and give you a whole bunch of stuff. So I like Keegan as a player that I would build around. But I also, one of the other features to Keegan is he's just about to start a 5-year extension. Mm-hmm. Like, you have him in your building, and the Kings are going to look different today. They'll look different next year. They'll look different the year after that. But we're talking about 3 more years after that. What do they look like? And you're hoping that eventually this team does turn a corner, and that Keegan Murray can be a big part of that. And Keegan Murray in his prime can be a big part of that. Got him under contract. He's happy where he's at for right now. So I would say I'm not trading him unless it's realistically, you know, probably like 8 through 12. I would potentially listen, but even that, I would still be a little hesitant, because what are you going to have to take back as well? Like, are you going to have to take back bad contracts? Or are you going to have to take bad players? Like, it's a little bit more complicated than just a straight swap for the 22nd pick.
Have you started to really dive into the draft yet? I mean, I know we'll have a conversation coming up in a few minutes about AJ DeBonsta and Darren Peterson plays tonight, and those are the ones and twos. But have you started to dig into like a 3, 4, 5? Have we started the Locked On Kings top 5 prospects for the Sacramento Kings yet?
Well, I haven't started writing it down, but I'm watching a ton of college basketball. So, you know, again, I think Darren Peterson is like one of the most intriguing prospects we've seen in the last like decade. Again, we're talking about a ready-made, like, walk off the street and be an all-star level player and a player you can build your team around. But my top 5 is pretty set as of right now. I love DeBonsta. I've watched a ton of DeBonsta already. Just the joy and the energy he plays with is, you know, it's crazy. I think Cam Boozer, I'm a little leery on Cam Boozer because he's just so plodding. But the next two guys for me are Kingston Fleming and Caleb Wilson. So I think, you know, Kingston Fleming just keeps jumping off the page to me. And I want to compare him. I hate doing this, but he feels like De'Aaron Fox if De'Aaron Fox really, really wanted to be a superstar. And, you know, again, like, some of it's a little blocky, but he's fast, he's long, he's athletic, he shoots the 3. And when he's on the court, he's diving. He just is so engaged in every single second that he's a player that, again, if you end up with the 4th pick in the draft, I would be totally fine with the Sacramento Kings ending up with him. And, you know, the same with Caleb Wilson. I think Caleb Wilson's got a ton of upside. I just think that they're both of those guys, maybe their ceiling isn't as high. I do think that Cam Boozer probably has the highest floor of any of the players at the top end of the draft. But he's got some things that I'm concerned with too.
I continue with these, especially with these point guards. I just go back and forth, and it's really a 3-man race with some of these PGs that, man, I see one week and they're so impressive. Then I watch another game from the other guy and it's like, maybe he's better. And I'm, you know, I'm thinking about guys like Michael Brown,
yep,
Kingston Fleming, and Darius Acuff. Those three, I mean, I'm looking at a point guard for this draft if you're not able to get, you know, one or two. And are there either one of those three guys that have kind of stood out to you that they all have their plus and minuses, but like if you had an opportunity today, because it might change from week to week, who would you go with out of those three?
Yeah, I mean, I've watched enough of each of them. I love Kingston Fleming. I just think like he's, you know, he's a big guard, 6'4". I like his brand of basketball. That's not to say that the others aren't going to be like higher end scoring options, because I think they probably both will be. But I do like his ability to run a team, his ability to play defense, all of that stuff. So once we get past Peterson, and I'm so leery on Darren Peterson, it's not even funny. Like, I don't know what to make of him as a prospect at all. I watching him look at Bill Self and take himself out of a game is just so shocking to me. You know, and then you watch the other guy is AJ DeBonso. You can't peel that guy off the court. It's like, you know, you're trying to drag him off the court. He's like, no, I'm staying on the court. I just don't get it. So I am very leery on Peterson as the number one pick. But I also don't know that the Kings are going to land the number one pick. So it doesn't really matter. And I think he's going to go there almost assuredly, just because everyone looks at him and thinks Kobe Bryant. But I don't remember Kobe Bryant asking to come out of games and not playing in 13 or 14 games and sitting in a second half of against AJ DeBonso, because you lit DeBonso's team up in the first half. You dropped 22 on him or whatever it was. And like, all right, I showed what I got. I'm going to sit here and hang out here for the second half, played like 2 or 3 minutes. Like, those are things that are alarming to me, because I think at the end of the day, as much as all the measurables and all of the points and, you know, the raw numbers and all that stuff, like being able to see who cares and who wants it, that matters. You know, like, you want a winner. You want somebody who not only like says they're a winner, but goes out there and actually wins and shows you that they're all about that and they're not about anything else. And again, that's the one reason why, even though I don't like, I'm watching Cam Boozer and like how again, he just doesn't look like he's in the greatest shape. Either that or he's just a really, really slow moving player. But that dude has won everywhere he goes. Like he won like 4 state championships or something. And he's going to win at Duke as well. And so I'm looking at that as one of the high things that I'm looking at, especially when you're diving into a draft class that's really good. Like, who is a winner? Who wants to be here? Who wants to be part of something, but also who doesn't have an off switch and shows up every night? And that's something that I think we can start to measure here a little bit as you're watching them play.
Hammer, do you think we had an interesting discussion last week about the, say, number one, number two overall pick in the draft, a top draft prospect, and whether that has any influence on whether Doug Christie is back as the head coach next year. Do you think that it does have an impact where the Sacramento Kings are drafting, with the idea of we've got to get our coach in here to coach this player? Because if you're the number one, if it's AJ or Darren Peterson, we talked about this last week, and Hammer, you've been through this a lot. If you're the number one or number two, guess what? You're the face of the franchise. You're the savior. You're the one everyone's looking at. You're the one everyone's turning to. You're the one that we're building around. You're the focal point of all of the campaigns, the meet and greets. You're going to have the biggest rookie year, you know, the busiest rookie year of your life. Do you want, like, that guy, your coach, in there day one? Or it's like, no, we're going to continue to see what we have here with Doug Christie as our coach?
Yeah, I think it's a really difficult question. And, you know, I can't sit here and tell everybody that Doug Christie's done an amazing job at as head coach of the Kings this year. They're 12-46. You know, the coach we saw last year that finished, what, 27-24 in the final 51 games amidst like so much chaos, like whatever has happened here, it hasn't translated to this season. And I don't think that you have to let go of Doug. You know, you're in a transition year. You're in a transition 2 or 3 years where you're going to strip this thing down. But what I want to, how I'm going to grade Doug, especially over the last, you know, the post All-Star break, like what do the young players look like when they're given opportunity? How do you develop? And again, we're kind of, it's a bummer that Dylan Cardwell is not part of this, but I need to see what a neat Clifford looks like between now and the end of the season. I need to see if Max Reynaud continues to throw up double doubles every single game and continues to grow and learn, become a better defender. I need to see if Keegan Murray can take a leap. These are things that I honestly think are on Doug at this point. And, you know, I'm not worried about Devin Carter, whether he's part of the program or not is still a huge question mark moving forward. But, you know, can you start to show that these guys are taking the coaching, that they're getting better, that the team itself is growing in some certain way, even if it's not amounting to wins, before I fully make a decision on what's going to happen. And like, look, we all know that this is going to be the same thing next year. Like it's just, you're going to be 1 year closer to the end of, you know, the contracts of Zach LaVine and Malik Monk and Domantas Sabonis. So if you can't move off of these guys, you know, that might be a bigger question, Damian. It's, you know, what does this team look like if Zach LaVine isn't here next year, but you've brought in like 2 or 3 players to replace him and you were able to make some move. Can Doug take that team and lead them, or is that where you want to reset everything? But as of right now, Doug, if he wants to coach the top 5 pick that's going to be on this roster next year, show me you can coach the number 24 pick, the number 42 pick. Dylan Cardwell comes back, maybe him, the former number 4 overall pick and Keegan Murray. Show me that you can bring those guys along and continue to show that they're taking steps in the positive direction, and that's how I'll judge.
Do you think the streak ends tonight against Memphis, at Memphis, who quietly, they're doing their own thing right now. They're doing their own thing. Do you think tonight is the night? Because if it doesn't end tonight, James, I think we're definitely seeing like low 20s at least.
I think it does end tonight.
Oh,
I'm hoping it does end tonight. Okay. Just so these guys can breathe. It's so hard playing and having this type of losing streak. And, you know, again, in my career, I haven't covered a streak this long. But like my first year covering the team, there was a stretch where they lost 7 in a row, 1-1, and then lost 8 in a row, or it was 8 in a row, 1-1, lost 7 in a row. So they lost 15 out of 16. And it just does so much damage to the psyche. You know, every single game you're having guys come out and have to talk to the media. And that's what I loved the conversation with Max we had the other night. Just like super, super smart, super analytical, but also understanding that like this isn't on him and this is part of the job. And he's learning that now to come out and talk to the media and to, you know, take one for the team. But it's a tough situation to lose this many games. And some of these players, they've never lost this many games in their entire life, let alone, you know, their college career, their high school career combined. They didn't lose 46 games total. And here they are, like, not being able to get out from underneath this heavy weight that's pushing them down.
You talk about Max there a second ago, and that was a great interaction between you guys and Max and Reynaud. It was obviously real, and that can be refreshing at times. Do you think we've seen anything close to Max's ceiling?
No. I mean, he hasn't even been able to go out on the perimeter and shoot threes.
Is that where you think his most growth will be? Is it stretching the floor a little bit, or is it more on the defensive end?
Well, I mean, I think there's nowhere to go but up on the defensive end. He's just not good defensively at all right now, and he's got to figure that out. I think he's gotten better. And, you know, they were talking about on the broadcast how he's gained weight this season, as opposed to losing weight. Like, he's been able to bulk up during the season. They've been working hard with him. But at the end of the day, like, I think we're just seeing the first layer of him. We're basically seeing, year one of Keegan where all he did was shoot threes. That, but we're seeing Max where all he does is score in the pick and roll. I think he's got a ton more game. And like, look at his rebounding numbers. Like, he's got 10 double doubles. And this is a guy who fell to the second round. You know, like, you get to choose your own adventure with him. Do you have him like bulk up so he becomes more of like a bigger Nikola Vucevic? Do you lean him down, keep him, you know, and try to make him into a Lauri Markkanen type player? Like, I think that there are a lot of different ways in which you can develop him, but you have to choose your path this summer and really work with him in the same way that I think that they tried to choose a path with Keegan Murray, and then the path kept changing because they couldn't figure out how to fill the other position next to him. So he kept getting pushed to the power forward spot. But, you know, like, Keegan Murray as a rookie versus Keegan Murray today, like, he's not even the same, like, remotely close defensive player. I mean, the way that he's been able to add to his lateral quickness, to his strength, to his balance is just stunning. That's what you're going to do with Max, but you have to choose a path. Do you want to bulk him up, add 15 pounds to him? Do you want to keep him lean and have him be a you know, 4 or 5 combo? So yeah, lots of decisions to make.
Kenny hates him.
Who's that?
You. You hate Maxine Raynaud?
Not at all. I really do like Max. I really do. I hope all that happens.
I feel like you're a little tough on him. And that's why I wanted James' perspective. I feel like he, I don't know how much, that's why I was trying to get a feel for like if the Kenny Caraway, I don't think he's close to a ceiling, but I don't know that he's like a all NBA player. Mm-hmm. I think you think this is him. And that's where I'm not there either. I'm just trying to get a feel for what people think Max could do more of moving forward.
Well, he wasn't this player at the college level. He was a stretch five at the college level. Mm-hmm. I mean, he shot a ton of three-point shots. And I think he's going to do that at the pro level as well. And I also, when I see him make those bounce passes to Malik cutting baseline, like, where is that? Because they've been reluctant to run anything through him. And if they're going to start putting in sets that allow him to create more for others, like, I don't know what he's got. But I'm here for it because he's not a selfish player. And he certainly, like, he's got a ton of skill around the basket. Does he have to get better as, you know, a shot blocker or as a defensive player? Yeah. I mean, he clearly has to get better as a defensive player. But also, like, you know, there's still moldable clay there. And again, the analytical mind that he has. I even liked that he dropped in a belt to ass. That was hilarious. Mm-hmm. And then apologized for that after, just so you guys know, he apologized for saying that. He got a little heated and then had media relations come back and say, hey, he didn't mean to say that. It's like, it's okay, man. You did. It was pretty clear. You got smacked around.
Again.
Yeah. No, I really do like Max's game. I just think the things that led to him being a second rounder have shown to be true in the NBA, and I don't know how that improves. And what I say by that is he was a poor defender, and he was soft against more physical competition, and he wasn't
He's gotten better in that second regard about being softer, because that was really noticeable in summer league. Like, the first time he stepped on the floor, it was like, oh, okay. You're going to have to fix that.
Yeah.
You think he's gotten better?
A little bit.
I do. Like, yeah. I do think he's gotten better in that, which plays to the, if he gets on the floor, plays minutes, like, there's, mm-hmm. he's going to need off seasons. You know what I mean? He's going to need coaches and things like that. But his time on the floor, I feel like, has done him well.
The one thing he does defensively that I do like is, oddly enough, he guards on the perimeter decent. Like, he does a decent job. He's not locked down or nothing like that, but he does a decent job. Where I see a problem with him is just, I think he's a little soft around the basket defensively, and like in certain switch situations or pick and rolls when the guy's going downhill, it's barbecue chicken, whether it's a big guy scoring on him or a guard or something like that. Like, he's got no shot. And those are the things that I'm not banking on improving drastically. I think they'll improve with just being around the league more and more experience. But he's not going to turn into, and I'm not saying anybody's saying he will, but he's not going to turn into Jalen Duren out there. Like, that's just not who he is. I think he can show more of his shooting ability that he showed in college and a little bit in the summer league. And I hope that finds its way into his game as next year goes.
Yeah, I would say this, like, we think that, you know, again, he wasn't a great rebounder in college and he was okay, but here he is at the pro level. He's second amongst the draft class in rebounds. And I know you said it's what made him fall to the second round. Okay, if we were to redraft this year's draft, where would he go? Top 12?
I think he'd go first round.
Yeah, he'd probably go first
mid,
round.
Yeah.
Mid first round?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Top 12?
I mean,
top 12
to 15. Yeah, I mean, that'd be mid. Yeah, 12 to 15.
Yeah, and again, I think your perspective of him would change because right now it's a good story because he's a 42nd pick in the draft. He's averaging 10 and 7. Like, if he was the ninth pick in the draft, you're like, oh boy, like Spencer Haas 2.0, right? Mm. But the fact that he's a second round pick, can he get better? Yeah, I think he can get better. And I don't even care that he's a little bit older prospect because clearly, you know, you talk to him and you look at what he was able to accomplish at Stanford. He wasn't just a basketball player. A lot of these guys are just basketball players at the college level. Like Max Reynaud was a lot more than that. He has a degree in mathematics and computer science, if I'm not mistaken. And like, this is a bright kid who is much more than just a basketball player. And I kind of want to see how he develops with now that it's his full-time job. So
great,
he's impressive.
Stuff. He is. And of the young prospects, he's the one that I like the most. And that's probably pretty universal, no?
I like Dylan the most.
Oh, Dylan, that's right.
I think Dylan.
That's right. I forgot because not season ending, but he's gone too. I forget that.
I think Dylan, what he does translates to a 10-year career.
Yeah,
I'm so confused by you, Kenny, because you typically just love the scores.
You guys don't.
Yeah, you don't care if they play a lick of defense, but if they score,
not true.
You're all over.
Not true at all. Not true at all. You guys just don't listen to me. There's a lot of defenders that I love, but I think that in basketball, I realize you do have to score to win.
Well, I think you're right. We just don't listen to you. We'll come back. That we got to weed through the impressions, and every once in a while, we'll find out Kenny likes a defender. Hammer, great stuff as always, man. Thanks for making time for us, and we'll check you out over on the Locked On Kings podcast and see you coming up on Wednesday.
Sounds good.
That's our man, James Hamm, right there.